Welcome to Sports Talk with Bobby and Adam. Today we will be putting a bow on the NCAA tournament, Louisville, your national champion, another magical tournament. Adam, what are some things you took away from this wild March?
Well, I once again was underwhelmed by the regular season, but picked up by the postseason. I loved this tournament. The final game put a fantastic cap on it because you had two very athletic teams playing together on the national stage, and they did not disappoint. You had a lot of raw talent out there, of course, just like you would with these young college teams. But they impressed. It was fun to watch and a lot of upsets this tournament. And you had two great teams that put on an offensive explosion. And that's what you want in that final game.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That championship game was an absolute battle. Michigan looked fantastic in the first half. Albright nailing threes to build them a 14-point lead. And then Louisville, they just come back strong to end the half. All of a sudden, they go into the locker room down, but right back in the game. A huge momentum killer for Michigan. And then the second half, Peyton Siva was phenomenal.
And you can't forget Luke Hancock. Wow. You know, a guy who is playing for his father, who is very ill. And it's amazing what he did, Hancock being the most outstanding player of the Final Four, then basically having a great game on Saturday and complementing that with the fantastic performance, especially battling right back after Albright had that great first half. And even though Albright got to tweet to Kate Upton, and it was covered all over ESPN all over on Tuesday, it still was a one-point game and a half, and the reason why was because Louisville had the way of coming back. And when you have Trey Burke on the bench for that many minutes in the first half, basically half of the first half, that's going to happen. And you know what? Mitch McGarry on the bench for a lot of the second half. Foul trouble as well. That really hurt Michigan. That put them in a tough situation. John Beilein, one of the best coaches in the NCAA right now, got a little tough, had a tough situation with that foul trouble. I think he judged it pretty well, but could have had those guys in a little bit more than they were, actually.
Well, you can't be overcautious in the national championship game. And I understood with McGarry, especially because he plays down low and is a physical player, but you have the player of the year, and he's a point guard. You have to leave him in the first half. I don't care that you're up 14. You leave him in the game.
Agreed.
And that huge run, that doesn't happen. Hancock killed them in a blink of an eye, and Michigan looked around and was just beside itself when that occurred. And then in the second half, a player who, I don't want to say that he's not getting credit or that he's not getting enough credit, but he could certainly use more publicity for the game that he played, and that is Shane Bohannon, who was terrific down low, especially that one play, going up about three times, ripping away from Michigan players, and coming up with a basket down the stretch. He was sensational on the glass in that second half.
I completely agree about Bohannon. I was so happy about him stepping up with those seven offensive rebounds. I think his career high is nine. Did it against some, you know, cupcake team. So he put up one of his best rebounding games of his career. And you saw Michigan coming out fantastic rebounding in the first half. I think they had seven of the first nine offensive rebounds in that game. I don't even know if they were able to get they got one the rest of the game after they started really hot on the offensive rebounding end. But Louisville controlled the rebounds the rest of that game. I think it had to do with Trey Burke going to the bench, just because no matter what he's doing on the floor, he is dominating that ball. When Albright comes in, he has that great spurt. But after that, they lost it. That was really a crucial moment. When they went up big, they couldn't regain that momentum the rest of the game. Hancock hits one shot. I think you're right. Trey Burke comes right back in after that one or two shots goes in, and they bring it down to a few possessions. That's when you want Michigan to have a chance there. Beilein, a little too cautious. You're right. You're bringing me over, far over to that end, saying that Beilein did make a mistake there.
Yeah, you got to keep the player of the year, especially point guard, on the court. Now, what factor was the Kevin Ware leg injury in all of this? How much of a role did it play? Because I really look at it like Louisville was the best team and Rick Pitino is just a sensational, spectacular coach, and that's why they won. Not as much of this motivation, win it for Kevin Ware business. How much are you buying in?
It's so tough because I always look at the game in itself, and I'm saying that they lose a lot of minutes off the bench. They lose that other guard that helped Russ Smith when Russ Smith was down and not doing that well. When Russ Smith was missing 13 of 16 shots and having a terrible ball game, Kevin Ware could have been there to allow them some help off the bench. I think it definitely helped keep the team together, had that camaraderie feeling. It definitely did something. But his absence physically on that team hurt them. And they could have won that game. They could have had a little bit better first half. I think if he was in there, would have been able to be a little better having that depth with him.
Yeah, John Beilein is a heck of a coach. Just one unfortunate mistake right there that ultimately played a pretty significant factor in his team not coming away with the national championship. Adam, we're talking about March Madness as a whole here, not just the championship game. During this magical tournament, what was your favorite game?
It had to be, and staying in the realm of Michigan, it had to be their win over Kansas, the last second shot by Trey Burke to tie the game, send it in overtime. That was three of his 23 points that he scored in the second half and overtime. He didn't even put up any points in that first half. The Michigan Wolverines were down by 14 with 7 minutes to go, 5 with 21 seconds to go. Now, that was an impressive game, one of those fun ones, one of those high-scoring ones that you really don't forget, because when offense dominates and you have those last-second shots, now that's a memorable game.
Adam, every week I felt like you're asking me about, quote-unquote, my own... What a magical run it was, all the way to the Final Four. And it really became magical when they beat Indiana in the Sweet 16. What a win. This campus erupted after that. That was phenomenal to beat what, in my opinion, was the most talented team in the country and really shut them down. Just a spectacular defensive performance. Jim Boeheim had a phenomenal coaching effort in that game. Michael Carter Williams led the way and really showed the NBA and the world his true potential. He had 24 points, 5 rebounds, 4 steals, and a block in that game. He was spectacular, including hitting a couple threes. CJ Fair also had 11 points, 9 rebounds, and Brandon Trish, the senior guard, who has started and played in more games than anyone else in SU basketball history, had 14 points and 4 rebounds. So that game was just magical to see them shut down heavily favored Indiana in the Sweet 16 to go back to the Elite Eight where they were a year ago. That was something special to watch.
And a lot of those guys you mentioned we'll be talking about soon when we do a little NBA draft preview. It'll be a lot of fun to discuss a lot of the guys and how they've moved up and down the rankings when they will be moving into the professional ranks. But that's great to see that Syracuse is able to have a strong performance after, fizzling out last year after all the Fab Melo situation. But they had a great year after being pretty disrespected overall over the season, and then you see the two four seeds, coming from my game from Michigan, and then coming from your game in that Syracuse game, they then were able to face off in each other in the Final Four. That was a great game. There was a tough block charge call at the end there, but what do you have to say about that, Bobby?
The block charge call, I would have called it a block. Maybe if I'm
Me
a
too.
Michigan fan, I call it a charge. That was a tough call. I don't blame the referee for that in the moment. That is about as 50-50 as you can get. Yeah, the replays, when you slow it down, it certainly looks like he's moving. But in the moment, it's a whole other thing to call. So I really don't blame them for that. I'll tell you one call that I thought should have gone the other way. Michael Carter-Williams, fourth foul over by half court near the sideline. He gets elbowed by Tim Hardaway and called for a blocking foul. That was a clear charge to me. I thought that was a bad call that helped Michigan as momentum was swinging Syracuse's way. And it was just unfortunate that James Sutherland hits a three to get it to within one. They're on this great comeback at the end of the game. And then after that, there's the aforementioned charge call from Trish. And, you know, Michigan, you give them credit for hitting enough of their free throws. They missed a couple, but they made them at the very end. And then they couldn't, Syracuse could not get the ball back to James for three. They got the ball in a three-point specialist, Trevor Cooney's hands. He drove, for reasons beyond me, drives to the basket down by three, which is not his game. I've never seen him do that. But he takes off to the basket. I guess he got a little nervous there, which is understandable, Trevor. If you're listening, I'm not calling you out. Maybe I am a little bit. And, you know, it was just unfortunate to see that happen on the last play. But that's part of the game. And I credit Michigan. That was a game where John Beilein was spectacular coaching. And you talk about taking someone out and having it hurt you. C.J. Fair had a quick 9 points at the beginning of the game, and Syracuse was looking good. He gets taken out, and SU's offense completely evaporated and allowed Michigan to get comfortable, go on a run, and it really changed the complexion of the game.
I'm glad that my one question about the block charge call went into your whole synopsis and opinion of the game. I loved that. That was fantastic. Because now, since... because... I'm pretty sure that you were on pins and needles that entire game, being on the Syracuse campus. But that was something, you know, you touched on. I touched on, I guess, originally the referees, and you know, we had the Pac-12 situation recently with Eddie F. Rush, who used to be the NBA referee and now is the ex head of referees of the Pac-12. And then you have all these separate conferences with their referees. And then all the teams now switching conferences, all the schools switching conferences. It's a very interesting situation with these referees. And I really don't know what's going to happen with this. NCAA really needs to control this. You might want something to change in the future. Just like the NBA has a consolidated one for all the referees in their league, you might want something soon for the NCAA.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And you talk about realignment playing a factor. Syracuse, along with Louisville and Pittsburgh, a couple Big East schools, go to the ACC. They like to play physical, that Big East style of basketball. ACC refs, they call a much tighter game than you're used to watching in the Big East. So there's going to have to be some middle ground there. It can't be all ACC, and you can't completely cater to the new guys coming in. So there's got to be some middle ground there in terms of officiating. When we come back, we will discuss the NBA draft, whose stock's rising, who's falling, and who's going to go where. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Bobby and Adam. We will now be discussing the upcoming 2013 NBA Draft. It will be held at Madison Square Garden on June 27th. We'll be looking forward to a lot of players who will be coming out this year like any other. But it'll be interesting because we're going to be waiting to hear a lot of other guys who will be declaring their NBA Draft status. One guy who has really stood out to me, Ben McLemore, recently has said that he will enter the draft, and he is my number one overall pick. Obviously, depending on who will be getting the number one pick, we'll be seeing in the lottery. But, Bobby, who do you think is going to be at the top of this draft board?
Well, you know, when someone goes down to injury, you usually don't think that they're going to stay atop the board. But based on everything that I've heard right now, and granted it's still plenty early, but it seems like Nerlens Noel is still a strong candidate to be the number one pick. So I see him going number one. And at number two, I have your guy, Ben McLemore. He's probably my favorite player in this draft. I think he's going to become the best scorer out of the top five. And then at number three, if you continue down, I have Georgetown product Otto Porter, who just had a tremendous season. Really came on strong in the second half of the season. And then, unfortunately, his play dipped in the Big East tournament, and they were only in there for one round, losing to Florida Gulf Coast, who became quite the Cinderella story in the tournament. But Otto Porter, tremendous two-way player, good length, athleticism. He can shoot, put the ball on the floor, defend the perimeter, strong. I like him a lot. He's a very, very well-built player who can do a lot of things at both ends of the court. So he certainly impressed me this season. And then looking at that number four spot, I see Anthony Bennett, the big man. Now, the issue with him is that he's listed at 6'8". He's big. He's 240. But the NBA, 6'8", even in the smaller game, it's a tough size to succeed at down low, especially if you're not as mobile and you're not able to defend guys who now like to face up to the basket and play a bit further out than the blocks. So I think he's still going to be a top five pick. The question is not only his maturity and his motor, but how he's going to be able to compensate for being 6'8 and a bit hefty at the NBA level. Certainly things he's going to have to work to make adjustments for. And then looking at the number five pick, I see Victor Oladipo from Indiana, who is another great two-way player, a guy I think can really be a difference maker for a team with his strength, athleticism, his ability to defend the perimeter. He's the type of guy that you need defending elite scoring wings in the NBA. He's the type of defensive wing that you need if you're going to be a competitor to go deep into the playoffs and possibly compete for a championship. So he's a player I like a lot, not to mention what he gives you at the offensive end, with his ability to attack the basket, where he's proven to be fearless and has just tremendous athleticism. It seems like anything you throw up there, he can go and get. And he can shoot the three ball pretty well. So I like them a lot. Another guy who deserves honorable mention for me is Shabazz Muhammad, who the big thing with him is his work ethic. And if he's going to have his head on straight, at the NBA level, There's just no excuse if you can't get it together and work hard to be a great player, especially with all the natural abilities that he's been given, because he's a player that is just so talented. He really didn't have a very good season at UCLA, but even in games such as Kansas State, he showed that he can be a clutch player and step up big at the end of the game. So it's really not that the moment gets too big for him. He's someone who can step up and carry a team. So with him, it is just a question of what you're going to get out of him work ethic wise. And I really hope that he puts in the work ethic necessary to be an elite player, because he has that chance.
We know there's one team who will not be taking a chance on Shabazz Muhammad, and that is the Houston Rockets, because after having to draft Royce White, they are definitely not going to be taking anybody with a risky background. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes, because at 16 last year, Royce White was an interesting pick, definitely an intriguing one who had the talent, but it ended up being a very, very poor pick as far as what we're looking at right now, with him barely even being able to play in their system, let alone for the big league club. So it's frustrating to see that Shabazz is still a question mark, but it'll be interesting to see also is for Oladipo. It'll be very, very tough on Indiana now going forward for him, but that'll be good for him to go into the NBA, because he definitely has the talent to be a top five pick. And I like that top five. That was definitely a great look at the draft. And now we're going to jump down a little further. We're going to look at the Boston Celtics. And of course, we're both big Boston Celtics fans, you and me, Bobby. We can talk about the fan question of the show from Nicola Bogani. He wants to know, who will the first pick be for the Boston Celtics in this upcoming NBA draft? Most likely, they'll have around the 16th pick or so, depending on their finish. But right now, they'll be around that area, and of course, they'll be looking for a big man. Who do you think they're going for?
It's really just a question of who's available, but there's certainly a bevy of names out there. That includes Mason Plumlee from Duke. There's Gorgui Dieng from Louisville. C.J. McCollum is a guy that I would love to follow to the Celtics if they're... He might be the most talented player in this upcoming draft, and it would certainly be sensational if he was still there when the Celtics were picking and they took him. We'll see. I don't expect Cody Zeller to be there, but again, maybe they trade up. Maybe he falls for whatever reason. You never know. And then there's other guys like Mitch McGarry, who he's probably going to return to Michigan, but let's just say he changes his mind and goes to the NBA draft because he's hearing good things from scouts. You never know with him either. So there's certainly a plethora of options for Boston. I look at more who's going to be available in that later on area of the back end of the first half of the first round of the draft. So that's the bigger issue. But in terms of needs, of course, you look at center. And, you know, depending on what they're going to do with Rondo, maybe a point guard. So we'll see what the Celtics' plans are come draft time.
They're a pretty unpredictable franchise when it comes to this draft time, you know, trade, signings, what they want to do. But most likely, if this team stays at what it is right now, obviously their need is size. Kelly Olynyk is another guy that I, you know, definitely have in their, in their view for the draft. You know, he really didn't show up against Wichita State, and that was pretty ugly when they lost that game. So if he can't overpower a Wichita State team that is more of an outside shooting team, I'd be a little worried if the Celts want to get him. There's also a guy I think I saw in a few mock drafts, a center out of France, Rudy Gobert. I'm actually not 100% how to pronounce his name. Never heard of the guy before until seeing some of these mock drafts, but maybe the 7'1", 230-pounder would be an addition as far as size goes, but we don't know when he'd be coming over to America. Doug McDermott, a scorer off the bench most likely for the Celtics, would be an interesting option around this time. And another guy outside, out of Georgia with a very, very cool name, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who I've seen some stuff from him this year, some games from him. Definitely a pretty strong leader for a team that can score a lot. He did that for that Georgia team this year. So there are a lot of guys, a lot of options, and most likely they'll end up going with a big man. But there are a few options there for Celtics fans this upcoming draft. And Bob, I think you have one more guy that you are looking out for.
Yeah, I'm not sure if too many people are familiar with this name. Kudos to you if you are. Giannis Antetokounmpo, a 6'10 point guard from Greece who is starting to get a lot of attention from NBA executives. So far, the Oklahoma City Thunder, Denver Nuggets, Toronto Raptors, and Houston Rockets have all flown out to Greece to watch this 18-year-old play. He has the chance to really rise up the boards as we get closer to draft time. The Celtics' Danny Ainge, the most recent one to fly out and watch this kid play. Some mock drafts have him around that 24th spot, and there's a growing belief amongst people who do know him that he's going to rise up into the back end of the lottery, have a similar type of rise that Bismack Biyombo did a few years back. So we'll see what happens with Antetokounmpo, and don't be surprised if this is who Ainge takes if he's still on the board. 6'10 point guard from Greece, 18 years old, certainly can play the game.
Wow, that's a lot of size right there. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens this NBA draft, one of my favorite days of the year. And thank you, Nicola, for such a great question, arousing such a fun conversation about all these possible players that the Celtics can select in the draft. Well, it was another fantastic episode of Sports Talk with Bobby and Adam, and you can reach me on Twitter at @StatsAdam, and you can always tweet to the hashtag STWBA with your questions. We'll be back next week to answer those. And where can they find you, Bobby?
You can find me on Twitter at Bobby_K91. Again, don't forget to use that hashtag to get your questions answered on air. And we will see you later. Have a great week, everyone.